Hey, yo, man, what time you got? Hey, you gotta get... What's up, man? Free? Man, you tripping. We gotta get... Nah, man, get... No. What I say,
we going Dutch.
Players wanna get the play.
We going Dutch.
Players got the pay to
play. We going Dutch.
Gotta hustle every day.
We going Dutch, y'all. Come on. We going Dutch.
Players wanna get the play.
We going Dutch.
Players got to pay their way.
We going Dutch.
Gotta hustle every day.
We going Dutch, y'all.
Testing.
We from the RBF. Fucking more press than a center up in a rest stop. The careless whispers are making hits within a double KI. But touche flambe, the brown bomber. Got more cuts than Jeffrey Dahmer's mama. I got more game than Nintendo, friend. It's not Canadian black or cone of gold. It's just Indo European. And you can see it in my skin.
And this is Pedro Angel Serrano. And this is part two of a conversation with Dutch Boy and Paradigm, two hip hop artists who are involved with creating culture and helping to promote the development of an independent queer hip-hop scene, and doing a fine job. Dutch Boy, you'll know from fatfamily.org, a website you started back in 95?
The website was actually in 98.
98.
I started rainbowflava.com, which was the website for my band at the time, which was Rainbow Flava. The clip you just heard was from the song Goin' Dutch, which appeared on our album Family Business and is also available on our compilation Fat Family Records Volume 2, Down for the
Volume
Swerve.
Two.
Yeah.
But,
go ahead. Yo, and Paradigm, you...
I'm on that Volume 2. Volume 2.
Performing
as well.
As well. And we're part of... Dutch Boy and I formed the group BQE.
Right.
Not BQD, as Girlfriends Magazine said.
It's BQE.
Yeah.
Three letters.
Yeah. Paradigm, you've been getting interviewed a lot.
Yeah.
Times lately. You were involved with a VH1. You were interviewed for a VH1 thing.
Yeah, called Totally Gay.
Totally Gay.
And what totally
was, I don't identify as gay, so I think it's really funny. But it was great. It was actually, the director was a really great guy. And that experience was very interesting because I still am unsure about why they asked me, except for that I fit this interesting, demographic.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, as like young, queer, woman of color, who's a rapper and a poet.
Academic.
Academic. Okay. So
kooky.
So
that's kooky.
Wild. So, you know, kind of like scholar artist thing. But it was good in that people have been calling me and emailing me for the last month saying, I saw you on TV, you're famous. And I'm like, no, I'm not getting any money. I'm waiting for the contracts to come through. But
yeah. Right, what was it that you wanted to say and get across on that?
What they ended up showing was me talking about Bound, the movie Bound, and how I watch it with the sound off, which is a little creepy. Which made me sound much creepier than I think I am. And then I talked.
What you should have said is I turn off the sound and I listen to Fat Family Records Volume 2, Down for the Swerve, available at fatfamily.org.
It syncs up.
Yeah. And I also talked a little bit about just some kind of post-gay identities, and that, you know, people are starting to realize that they can maintain their, you know, they can integrate all their core identities. I talked about, like, they interviewed me for 2 hours and they showed me for, you know, 30 seconds. So, yeah. I mean, that's what happens. You know, they interviewed a lot, you know, 40, 50 people. So, but it was fun.
Yes.
It was sugary good fun.
And for the folks who don't know what Bound is, could you explain?
Yeah, it was a movie made in right before The Matrix by the Wachowski brothers. The movie they made so that they could make The Matrix, and it starred Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly as they were in a relationship and they were like criminals. It's just a very stunning movie. So in terms of visual stuff.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons it comes up a lot in discussions of homosexuality in film is it was one of the first films in which a real effort was made in to portray the like physicality of like a same-sex relationship in a credible way. In fact, the Wachowski brothers actually hired Susie Bright, this, you know, queer
Sexpert.
Susie Sexpert, as a technical consultant for the love scenes, In terms of, you know, how they position these two women and how, like, you know, they
So it wouldn't moved. Be a heterosexual male fantasy.
Right. Not that it probably wasn't still, but, you know, I can see where, you know, a woman who loves women might watch that film with the sound off because it is visually very stunning.
Which I do.
The part of what I wanted to talk about was because you and you were present at a homosexual hip-hop panel that took place a couple of years back surrounding all the controversy of homophobia in hip-hop with Eminem,
right.
Which you really weren't interested in talking about.
Right, yeah.
You were the folks were talking about corporate control of the media, the gay stream media, and about homophobia in the record industry.
Sure.
Where there are people who are selling thousands of CDs of their music, then they get approached by a major record label while they're out. They're out and selling CDs, but the label says, well, you have to go into a closet now.
Right.
Which is true. I'm not making that up, folks. That's really...
Yeah, no, it's...
Or the labels are perfectly willing to sell music to gay people and, you know, get them to spend their gay dollars, but they have very specific ideas about, like, what...
Kind of music.
Right. What kind of music various kinds of people are interested in, and they're very heavily invested in. And people being predictable, you know, conduits of dollars.
That's where it gets hard to be an artist because, I mean, there's one of my, you know, favorite artists, Michelle Indigocello, was approached by Maverick to be marketed as, like, a lesbian artist, and she doesn't identify as a lesbian. And that's not how she wanted to present her music.
Yes. Right.
And so that upset Maverick. And it set a lot of the lesbian community, frankly, too.
Yes.
And they felt like she was closeted and all this nonsense. And so I think that, you know, for me, it's a balancing act because I don't want to – I make hip-hop music for people who listen to hip-hop.
Yeah.
If they're queer, if they're LGBT, if they're straight, if they're young, if they're people of color, if they're urban, youth, fine. But I don't think gay music. I am queer identified. I'm out, been out for a very, very long time. But I don't make – gay music. I don't make lesbian. I mean, that's just, I just don't.
You're part of a community and you're working to get, like, things that you see and messages that you want to
out
get across
there.
To your community.
And that's whatever impacts me in my life, that's what I talk about. So obviously my sexuality, my gender identity, my race, my gender, all that stuff happens.
Well, and it's hard because there isn't necessarily inherently anything wrong with, like, the business of making art, you know, necessitating that some people are going to be primarily interested in the business side
Absolutely.
And some people interested in the art side. In the same way that there isn't, you know, it's perfectly natural and normal that, like, governments are going to sponsor art and you know, fund it and try and figure out what art is in the public interest. The idea, I think, is laudable enough that, like, in the marketplace, there will be business people promoting art so that artists can think about their creative goals.
Right. Marvin Gaye was a great artist and very successful.
Yes.
Right.
And I'm not one of those people who believes that those two tend to be, you know, mutually exclusive.
At the same time, his record label didn't want to put out what's going on. But.
Right, right, exactly. No, and
but he was powerful enough to get it out.
Well, and I think the idea, the Western liberal idea is that in a free market, that eventually the public will respond to quality art.
Yeah.
I think the issue here, particularly when you have a time when the labels, when media companies are really nervous right now because music sales are down, and the feeling is that the sale price of CDs is inflated and nobody's really sure where, like, the next generation of money is going to come from, that they're very much – they're much more risk-averse than they have been in the past in terms of wanting to develop new talent, in terms of wanting to take risks, in terms of wanting to market art to people outside of what their market research tells them this particular group of people is likely to want to buy.
Yeah.
And – you know, gay people and urban youth-oriented music is a great example of that. You know, the belief is that there isn't a market among LGBT people for hip-hop, R&B, soul, neo-soul music. And that's kind of an issue right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's nothing – I don't think there's anything specifically wrong with identity-driven music. I think that that's very important. I mean, obviously hip-hop is identity-driven music.
Totally identity-driven.
And it's multiple identity-driven music at this point in its life. I think traumatized people – I mean, this gets into a whole thing. It's traumatized people to claim – everything and anything. I mean, you know, it's like, you think about, you know, black women and children having a rally in support of R. Kelly. Mm-hmm. You know, and black women and children having a support for R. Kelly. Okay, right. A pedophile, you know? You know,
R. Kelly was an R&B singer who was charged with, I think, statutory rape.
And he also married the deceased Aaliyah when she was 15. So this is a man who, you know, has a thing for young girls. But, you know, traumatized people with kind of trauma, you latch onto whatever, because it's yours. So it's like gay rainbow, you know, rainbow necklace for my dog, rainbow underwear, you know, and I think that has a place. I think that's very important. I think that it's empowering in your coming out process, in your life process. Yeah. But I think that when you demand that the artists stick to these five topics, because those are quote-unquote gay topics, then you start getting into you're cannibalizing, like, your, you know, your identity.
Right.
And I think that, as, you know, someone who is you know, queer identified, I think that it's just very important for me to say to people, you can be whatever you want, you know. And this is our music, you know.
Yeah, we're segueing.
This is your music.
Is your music.
You are segueing magnificently into the issue of community and art as an expression of a community, and how communities develop. I've seen communities develop out of artistic, like, shared artistic experiences,
this,
like, going to concerts.
I mean, you know, How I Met Dutch Boy was at this panel, you know, and at that point, I didn't know who the queer hip hop art. Like, I kind of, you know.
Right.
Had an idea, but how do we get in contact with each other? This is before New York Times articles, this is before The Source articles, before Vibe articles, this is before, you know, we started being on TV and having, you know, there started to be a visible movement. It was known in, basically, this movement really, I think, started in San Francisco. And now New York, I think, because it is the birth of hip hop, is probably going to get more props in some ways. But it's really been this kind of bi-coastal thing. And then, you know, Texas and London and what happened in Chicago.
Atlanta.
You know, what I would like to see is, because I know a lot of hip-hop artists who are LGBT or SGL or in the life, as this people are now saying, or expressing same-sex desire, and I would love to see these people be able to, you know, for us to be able, for instance, one day have a venue where we do stuff once a month and we showcase, you know, not just hip-hop artists, you know, R&B artists, whatever, you know, dance hall, spoken word.
The significance of something like that happening is, for me, is that it's when you get these all these different folks together in one room. That's where the projects come out.
Right.
Because that's where I've seen, you know, like, campaigns for, like, back in Jersey where, you know, kids had a regular space to go to. That's when the Food Not Bombs chapter got started.
Right.
And that's when the homeless outreach thing got started. And that's when the collective got – the projects come out of the community.
Right.
The
we're having
first.
A show.
Yes.
I forgot about this thing called Word Life, and I think we're calling it the Word Life Lounge. Well, that's what I've been calling
it. Word Life.
Word Life.
MCs
and Poets in the Life. That's going to be November 1st at Blue Stockings.
We love Blue Stockings.
Yeah, so it's going to be MCs, you know, hip hop, and poets, spoken word artists. So we had two successful shows in July and August at Halcyon in Brooklyn and at Blue Stockings. So
that's Blue Stockings at 172 Allen Street in
the Lower East Side.
We'll be mentioning that definitely again.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, but the issue of one community generating thing that Dutch Boy has started is the compilations.
Right.
On your record label. The first, The Dozens?
The first one was called Volume 1, The Dozens. And that was, there's sort of a double meaning there. I came up with it shortly after I realized there were going to be 12 tracks. The Dozens is also an expression for something that, like, young people do where they just, they just hit you with, like, every insult they can think of. And
he's
you pass it back and forth.
Capping.
Running the dozens,
right.
And although, you know, the music wasn't necessarily all that insulting, it was just kind of listen to these lyrics, listen to this music, it just keeps coming. And the second volume was called Down for the Swerve. Swerve as in curve, as in angle, as in not straight. Volume number 3 is called Freaks Come Out, which is sort of a lyrical reference to an early hip-hop song called Freaks Come Out at Night. Freaks Come Out at Night, which, of course, we didn't sample because we don't do that kind of thing anymore. Not that we ever did, but
sampling is bad when you can't clear the sample.
It's true. Sample credits.
You go to jail.
Yes, you do. Or you put George Clinton's kids through college. Volume 4 is coming out, looks like around February 2004, called Struggle and Rhyme. And that's going to be the one that's focused on struggle, be it personal, political, musical, ethnic, racial, sexual, you know, trying to like economic. Bring out many aspects of struggle in terms of what our artists are dealing with.
And so there's been an evolution. The first of dozens was, hey, here introducing.
Yep.
Right.
And then you have the swerve, you know, dealing with.
With difference, with yeah. all of those
the
things.
The freaks come out as, gee, gosh, golly, what could it possibly be?
S-E-X.
About, yeah, it's all about sex and the wonderful one. And now, and this is the next, the one after that is more political.
Right.
Addressing
right.
So there's been this evolution. Has this been conscious at all with you?
Yes, it has, actually. Conscious in the sense that these are all elements that I wanted to incorporate from the beginning. But the part that was... That has been an evolving conscious process has been actually packaging it by theme. Mm. Initially, the theme of the first two compilations was really just, you know, good music was the idea anyway. Music by, you know, independent LGBT artists that I think you should hear because I liked it and I think you will too. And the response that I got the responses that I got from it in terms of the. I mean, some people just said, yeah, I like it or I don't like it, you know. But in terms of the thoughtful responses, I got a lot of people saying, I like it, but it's a little too gay for my taste. Like, you know, I don't have a problem with it. You're promoting gay artists, but all they're talking about is being gay, and that makes me uncomfortable. Or other people.
This is gay people saying.
This
that.
Is gay people, yeah. Or, you know, in some cases, straight people
some
too.
Gay, right.
And then I would meet other people.
Some people who are too gay. Just
well, and at the same time, there are some people who listened to it
gay.
And said, you know, I was really hoping for something that was really, really gay affirmative and really like, you know, gender subversive and all of this stuff. And I feel like this is a little too general. It's not it's not specifically gay enough. And I wanted something that was really more like, you know, to inspire like queer revolutionary poetry. And I was like, okay. All right, well, let's put out a CD that's all about us being sexually different and about us being outrageous and queer and you know, fabulous and whatever else you want to call it. And then let's put out a CD that is just about us as, you know, progressive individuals trying to find our place in the world. And those will be two sort of bookends of, like, what people have to express. And Freaks Come Out is very much the outrageous, the queer, the sexually... you know, freaky deaky stuff coming out there. That's the one you probably won't hear much on the radio.
Yeah.
You know, given the very legitimate and laudable concerns of the Federal Communications Commission.
But you can take it to your favorite gay bar and insist that they put
absolutely.
It on the jukebox.
Or you can burn it for your friends. And
or you can download it from
MP3.
mp3.com/fatfamily, P-H-A-T family.
P-H-A-T.
And then volume 4, which is not out yet, that's the
We're
one
working
that's,
on that.
That's the one with the struggle and all of that. And volume 5, which we hope to have out by the summer, is called In the Beginning Was the Word.
We're working on
that. And that's going to be the CD, which I'm co-executive producing with Paradigm, which will be kind of the marriage of queer hip-hop and queer spoken word, in which we'll be collaborating with a number of talented
we have a lot of people
spoken word
that.
Artists who aren't necessarily part of the hip-hop movement at this point.
I'll send you
collaborating with
that.
Hip-hop artists. I'm
yeah,
sure
we've
you
got
will.
We've got a lot of interest in that, so it's really
excellent. Cool. This is just amazing. Wow. So as far as like the independent music scene, you're getting these things out. You're not necessarily like buying a big house and stuff.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, I'm in graduate school right now and I'm, you know, sort of working. But, you know, we're starting to applying for grants, you know, for grants to do this because, you know, it gets kind of disheartening to constantly spend your money. And, you know, we're starting to think, you know, figure out to do more shows and what shows we want to do and what shows we don't want to do and touring and all that stuff and getting interest from other bands who want us to tour with them. But it's hard when you have a full-time job or, in my case, when you're in school. And, you know, but this is something that right now, you know, we're just trying to do, you know, and trying to, you know, make a sort of a living, but, you know.
Right. I'm what I've kind of gotten to the point of in terms of how I conceptualize what I do, I'm trying to transition from this being a hobby to this being like a sustainable sort of side enterprise.
Yep.
Like it probably will never be how I make my living.
Right.
And I'm okay with that as long as, you know, there's work to be had and I can, you know, I can live my life and pay my bills and still make music, then I'll consider this a success. There are other people who want to be doing this full-time, and I feel like Fat Family Records is a vehicle for people who are looking to build, you know, a business for themselves in terms of making this kind of music. Mm. It's also a resource for people who don't need to make their living doing this but want to be able to continue to afford to do it on the side.
Right.
And it's also a vehicle for people who have money from other parts of their lives that they want to invest in their community.
Absolutely.
You know, right. I think you can come at it from a lot of different angles, and I want to be a resource to all of those people.
Yeah. What kind of just going to wrap this up, but what kind of critiquing of the communities where people who aren't familiar with gay hip hop, like what are the hip hop artists saying about the communities that they're a part of? And
a lot of
stuff. What do you want to be saying?
Well, I think
I don't want to do part three. We haven't got time for that.
No.
Maybe some other time, though.
I think one reason I wanted to put out these compilations is because I feel like in this era of downloadable music and free music and snippets of so many artists out there that's not very well cataloged, there's a lot of amateur music. There's people just figuring out what they want to do, and there's something beautiful in terms of how anarchic it is that like anybody can set up an internet radio station. Anybody can put their music up on the web. But it also means for somebody who just kind of wants to see what's going on in a particular scene, it's very difficult to zero in on stuff that seems like it's going to be around for a while, or like people who are serious about what they do. And I would hear people go to a website like gayhiphop.com, for example, which has dozens and dozens of links to downloadable music, and they'd say, it's not that I have a problem with gay hip hop. It's just there's so much, and a lot of it I don't really like very much, or it's not the style that I'm used to hearing, or something like that. And I kind of wanted to introduce the idea of it's okay to showcase, you know, high quality, high production values, a high amount of professionalism in terms of the production. And that's not to invalidate people who are you know, just getting started, but I wanted people to know that there was a real range of artists making quality music that they were serious about. Right. The
a
quality
beautiful
of.
Rainbow.
Exactly.
And people are saying, talking about everything from living with HIV to, you know, to like, you know, dipping with someone else's girl or man to, you know, to anti-war stuff, to just trying to make money, you know, to living, to partying, you know, that's hip hop. That's the whole range. We're talking about what every other, you know, kind of genre or style of hip hop talks about, which is, you know, in the critique, I don't know, you know, if you want to really hear a great critique, I think is Goddess, the song by this artist named Goddess. It's called, which Dutch Boy's wearing the shirt, and it's called, what's the song where she's like, you can take your piece.
Oh, sing a rhyme.
Sing a rhyme. That song is tight. And she links the struggles of Jews, blacks, women, and gays.
Beautiful.
It's pretty tight. So.
Yeah.
So November 1st at Blue Stockings.
November 1st at Blue Stockings.
Right.
November 1st. With
BQE, Jen Rowe.
Performance poet Shantae Smalls, you might be familiar with. That's Paradigm's alter ego.
That's my secret.
And Maurice Kent. Jamal.
Maurice Jamal.
Will be performing as well.
So.
Great.
Come out. Thank you.
This has been great.
Thank you.
Where,
thanks for having us.
Yeah, with homophobia, like in pop culture and all this stuff, it's great to have people here who can do more than just complain.
Right.
You're listening to Out FM.